Right, we have tried basically every single hobby tool and gadget, and these are by far the worst.
You've got a mini fridge under your painting desk.
Have you got what?
It's not a hack. This is not a hack.
I guarantee no one thought that's where that was going.
Absolutely totals a brush. I was like, clearly it's me. Like, because everyone's using this stuff.
You treat your wet palette as if it's a bonsai tree.
I've prepared something to demonstrate.
I don't know how this is going to go. It's going to be like water all over the desk.
And this will work and function for hours and hours and hours without fail.
I've tried every wet palette, like all of them. And every single one has the same problem with... James, you taught a class then?
Did, yeah. The first class of a new curriculum, which we have launched this year, which is an army painting class. So learning how to be efficient with time, efficient with paint application for both infantry and also vehicles. So yeah, first one was at Element this weekend with 13 students, which was quite good. So.
Is that difficult doing one for like the first time? Because you've done the EMC for...
8 years.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, it is. I think one of the things to first is like, it's just the timings and stuff and just making sure, you know, you deliver the curriculum as best as physically possible, but at the same time, making sure that you're learning how you can make the course as efficient, but without sacrificing value, if that makes sense. So it's like, yeah, it's a bit of a juggle. But no, it's always fun doing a new curriculum. I've got a few others planned for the future, which will be good. But the army painting one was really good. Had some fantastic results, honestly. Like seeing people kind of like learn the process and learn kind of like how to be way more efficient with time and get more reward for that in the sense of what they actually achieve over the weekend, which was good. The goal is not to complete the tank on day one and complete all the infantry on day two, but it's just to get as much done as physically possible following the method of painting and the process and all the efficiency things that we teach. Just really so that they can go away with a lot more confidence to get through their grey shame, so to speak, in a more efficient way. Without sacrificing the thing that they want, which is a good-looking army or project, you know? So yeah, it's good.
Nice. Sweet. Should we do some listeners' comments?
Yeah, go for it.
Yeah. Aaron Cheek says, I know some people say, if you can't see it, then it doesn't need painting. So painting in sub-assembly is not necessary, but I can't have things unpainted, so sub-assembly is essential for me. I'm still a noob, so to speak, but I'm also really OCD about things. I have a bone to pick with this. You can see it. People will say like, oh, if you can't see it, it doesn't matter. But you can.
What are you talking about? There's like some things that you can't.
But like most of the stuff when people like apply that, like, oh, you can't see it, like say like a Marine and they always like say like behind the chest, you can't see the equivalent stuff. You can. You can see it.
There's certain bits that you can't.
If it's like the inside of a tank and you seal the tank up, then unless you've got X-ray vision.
Fair play, yeah, but no one's like sub-assembling a tank, are they? For the sake of painting the interior so I can glue it together.
I get that.
No, yeah. I get what you mean. Yeah. From point of like infantry, yeah, I guess. There's certain angles where you can see the thing that people are saying, oh, you can't see.
Yeah, I agree. Mm.
But I generally think, unless you're again painting to like a competition level or something like that, I think as long as those things are maybe like base coated, or if you've used like a black spray and your main armor color isn't like too far away from that, then you can get away with it. It just looks like shadow, doesn't it?
I feel like I use sub assemblies more for stuff that's hard to reach rather than stuff that's not visible.
I agree.
Like most of the benefit of sub assemblies for me comes from the fact of you can clearly see it and it's going to be a massive headache to reach it. So like that's why I'll often leave pretty much anything I paint off the base, because the base kind of hinders you from accessing from the bottom. I know James is very anti sticking a model to a base after the fact, but
we all have different processes.
I don't know where I land on that, if I'm honest. Yeah.
I've tried both.
And I don't know what one I prefer or why, or
yeah.
There's normally something else that I hate on the model that I've done that I'm not focusing on that.
It does kind of depend. It does depend on the models as well, because some models are very like skinny and spin, and depending on the pose, like sometimes it is really easy to reach everything.
Honestly, it is purely down to pose. Like the whole base thing, it's down to pose. Like for example, some of the models that have got big capes and things on them, it's literally impossible to access it because of the base being in the way, like the underside of the cloak. So I agree with you on models like that. But I think there's a lot of models out there that can be painted fully with the base mounted, because you can physically access everything. I'm a big fan of an open pose anyway, so I don't really like stuff covering chests. I know intercessors and things like that, you can't have them all, I mean, single-handed OG in the bolt gun, but go as much open pose as possible. And then, yeah, where obviously the bolt gun covers the chest or the gun covers the chest or whatever, just do that sub-assembly. Yeah. So, yeah.
Little early tip, that kind of leads into the army painting, speed painting thing, is like people don't think about building your models in a certain way to speed up the process, if you get what I mean.
Well, everything's in the plan. Like, if you plan, you know, fail to prepare, prepare to fail. So,
cool.
Early on, he's dropping them.
Little soundbite. Is that on the course, is it?
Yeah, it is.
James Curtis says, the three water pots just blew my mind. My paint pot is an old Easter egg teacup with about 15 years of paint crud on the sides. I also find photographing minis a good way to spot things you're not happy with. This made me really like laugh because I forgot those like Easter egg mugs are like iconic.
Yeah,
I feel like that's a real like mid-2000s like fad.
Can we just not overlook the fact that he used a word which I haven't heard in about two decades, which is crud. Like, crud. I haven't heard that word.
I actually hear that word, well, not so much anymore, but I have a friend who I haven't seen in a little while, and he is one of the only people I've ever met who like doesn't swear.
Okay.
Like, just flat out does not swear, and he would always say crud instead of something. So
I get really like I'm super, I feel like I make myself sound like an absolute lunatic unnecessarily on this podcast, but as soon as my water cup starts to get like all paint and stuff around the top, I'm like, that's gone. I feel like it makes my brushes, I'm like, I can't clean it in there because it's not clean.
I kind of jam jar in the dishwasher, gets it done every time.
Yeah, I just have like a jam jar type thing, and wash it out every time pretty much.
But eventually, after like literally years, it will like build up like scum around the top. You know,
not if you use your electric toothbrush and a bit of bio strip, mate.
Yeah. And not if you
I'm bio stripping my free jam. I've got another jam jar.
Depends if you like your jam jar.
Yeah, or just do what I do, hardly paint, and then it won't happen.
That's true. That's true. Yeah. Do you know my favorite? I've got like a real, do you have a specific like brand of thing you like for the water pots?
Yeah, no. IKEA candles, the big ones.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're amazing, literally.
I haven't gone that deep.
Mine is specifically the Doritos salsa is like the perfect size water cup for me.
That's insane. Yeah. That's just such a weirdly like specific.
I expect now in the comments for everybody to be putting what they use as a water pot. That's got to happen.
Do you keep the lid?
No, the lid's gone.
Why would you keep the lid? Yeah, why'd you keep the lid?
I'm just wondering if you're buying one with a lid.
No, but I will, when I notice that mine's starting to get like a bit beyond its day, I'll be like, oh, I better buy some more salsa on this week's shop, treat myself to some tortilla chips, and then get a water pot out of it.
That's just crazy.
I just go to IKEA, buy a new candle.
Yeah, but then you've got to burn the whole candle.
Yeah.
What, you don't like the nice smell in your house?
Yeah, but you're like 18 hours away from like having a water cup.
Not if you plan. If you plan, you go, right, okay, I know I'm going to need one in 6 months, so I'll get one now.
Six months?
Yeah. At least the salsa thing, if he doesn't quite finish it, or we can just wash it out.
Yeah,
like, you're like sitting there carving the candle out.
To be fair, I will finish it. It's not hard.
But, I know, yeah. I'm just saying.
Luke Martin says, I'm listening to the podcast in random order. Some memes and debates I get backwards, but you'll always inspire me one way or another. Been painting a little every night since mid-February, and it's becoming a routine every night. Even if I don't really feel like it, I sit and pull the models up I'm working on because I know I'm so much more organized and know what I have to do next. And I always end up having a great time. I thought this was funny because the idea of watching these in random order really unnerves me.
It's like, remember them books with like Choose Your Own Adventure.
Yeah.
Turn to page 34 to go in the castle. Yeah, or 43 like to go through like, the woods. Yeah.
You finish episode 24 and then you're like, right, go to episode 6 or go to episode 32.
Yeah.
Whatever one you want.
I love the idea of us like talking about something that we've talked about and then like 5 episodes later we'll finally find out
the thing we were
referencing.
The best part is like potentially us arguing over who said something and then like
and two, then he finds
two
out
episodes
after.
Later. Yeah. He goes, oh, I don't know.
Yeah, we was round about this earlier because the hobby hacks thing at the end of the episodes, you're doing all of them in April. And there's there's an argument about who came up with that and neither of us can remember. And everyone's pointed the blame on me and I don't think it was Martin.
I'm certain it was George, even though James has told me that it was James. I'm still certain it was George.
I'm quite happy for that deflection to be happening. So it's fine.
Unbelievable. Always on this podcast. I'll take the hit for everything.
99% sure that
it was me.
Actually,
honestly.
99% sure that it was actually George. Someone in the comments can let us know, I'm sure. But
yeah, well, we will have seen the episode by then, I suppose. But
yeah, I'm going to listen back immediately after this.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm sure it was you. And well, no, you said it was me. You said I just volunteered.
Well, I know it wasn't me. So it was one of you two.
No, I'm not being funny. I'm okay at maths. There's only three of us, and you didn't say it, and you didn't say it, so it's obvious it was me. So,
like, yeah, but the fact is, Joe went like, I hear you, James. I accept what you're saying, but I'm still going to blame George.
Yeah, but I'm totally cool with that. That's fine.
I reckon...
I'm sure you are, yeah.
from memory, George egged it on a little bit more. And then, by the way, obviously, you've all heard my first one by now. Criticized me because I didn't invent it. Like, what on earth? Obviously, I didn't invent it. I'm not going to... None of the hubby hacks that you have done, you have invented for...
James definitely invented the toothbrush because I know for a fact he's the only person on earth who has ever done
no,
that.
No, we've had plenty of comments.
I just want to caveat, I did not actually invent the toothbrush. So, that is not my claim.
Yeah. Like, what, we've got to give credit now to, like... the person who invented the shot glass.
George just wants you to be an artiste. That's what it is.
Yeah,
you know?
Well, I'm not interested. I'm not interested.
If you're a long-term listener of the podcast, you'll know how important it is to have the right tools to aid you in your painting. And if there's one piece of equipment that I could never live without, it's my Onyx lamp from Native Lighting. It doesn't matter what brush or paints you have if you can't see what you're doing in the first place. The Onyx is the perfect lamp for miniature painting because its super bright 2200 lumen LEDs cast soft and diffused light on your models without any harsh shadows. And its daylight balanced color temperature of 6500K gives you the confidence that the colors you are painting are accurate. As someone with a very small hobby desk, by far my favorite feature though is its articulating arm, which clamps to the side of your desk, maximizing your workspace. It's also super adjustable so you can sit comfortably in the perfect painting position without sacrifice. It also folds up into a compact shape, which is great if you like to travel to paint with your friends. To upgrade your setup and order yours now, head to siegestudios.co.uk/shop or head to the link in this episode's description. Right, we have tried basically every single hobby tool and gadget, and these are by far the worst. So this is going to be in no particular order. Some of the, I guess, product categories, not necessarily like a specific product from a specific brand, but like a product category that we have some better alternatives for, most of them being DIY solutions or, you know, an alternative product that we suggest. And we're going to be rattling off through these, going through them in no particular order, I suppose. But the first one we have on the list is a wet palette. And by wet palette, I don't mean having a wet palette, but the pre-manufactured, branded, specific for miniature painting wet palette, which we've spoken about on countless older episodes, I think,
like
the podcast.
It's an original topic for us. It's like first few episodes, the TK Maxx Jamesism was born.
That was it.
Well, in true Blue Peter fashion, for any of you that are as old as me or as vintaged as me, I've prepared something to demonstrate. So I'm a big, big fan.
By the way, I just want to... I know I've just cut you off and people keep commenting, telling me to stop cutting in, but I don't know how this is going to go. I just want to caveat that for everyone.
Oh, there's no...
I'm just envisioning there's going to be like water all over the desk. Like everything's going to be... Like the mic's going to cut out.
Look.
For the audio listeners, James has presented a Tupperware lid and some other gubs that he's going to do a live demonstration for, a Paint Perspective exclusive.
Yeah.
A live demonstration.
So if you are listening, you need to watch. So jump onto YouTube, watch the channel, and then subscribe while you're here.
We're going to do a bit of a picture in picture, I think, for this as well.
So if any of you that are listening or watching that are a bit OG and remember the TK Maxx Tupperware aisle conversation very early on, I have tested and used a whole plethora and swathe of wet palettes over the years. And I always go back to the DIY one, which I use, purely because I think personally it's got some real advantages. And just helps to focus you as a painter, which I'll explain a bit more as we go into it. First things first, the setup. What you will need for this walkthrough of the wet palette. We have got my favourite, my absolute... I'm a bit of a paper towel snob. I'm happy to admit that. Like, I if anyone knows or has come into class, then
this
I'm
goes
big...
back to a very old debate on one of the first episodes. Was the
yeah? I mean, I will often not be much of a snob when it comes to specifics such as this. However, the Blitz, Blitz paper towel.
The OG Blitz is the paper towel to use for all your miniature painting needs and for your wet palette. So I've got a pre-ripped off piece that's folded in half. We then also have some baking sheet. This is just greased with paper baking sheet. You can get it from anywhere really. I'd advise you get the sort of the white coloured one. The brown is a little bit thicker, and it still performs pretty well, but the white one is probably what I would recommend if you're going to pick one.
Something that a few people have commented asking whenever we've like spoken about this is, I don't know, I can't remember what it specifically was. It might be whether it's like old grease proof or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Certain people were like commenting about certain types not working as well with the water and absorbing.
But there's also I think the parchment paper gets roped in as like a all-in-one when it's not. So you've got like parchment paper, you've got baking paper, you've got greaseproof paper, and you've got wax paper, all of which can be mismarketed as each other.
So this is what I wanted to just clarify. So you are specifically saying...
greaseproof paper.
Greaseproof baking paper.
But sometimes that will be called just baking paper, and sometimes that will be called just parchment paper. Your mileage may vary on that.
I'm going to caveat and say this is the one I've used for ages and ages and ages. I'm talking like at least 10.
Where is that one from? I've not seen that one.
So I get this from either Poundland or Aldi. That's the two places that I get it from. So anyway, to dive into the real meat and potatoes of this demonstration. So I've got a pre-cut piece of baking sheet, as you can see. I've got my blitz that I folded in half. Very important that you fold it in half so it fits. And obviously, look, I'm using a Tupperware lid. And the reason for that, obviously, if you use the bowl, you have to reach over. It's a bit frustrating. And it's really good to then put the bowl on as the lid, essentially, for when you want to close it up and use it. But also, the reason why this is good is because it's a large working area. Okay, so you've got a massive, massive size working area. So first things first is we're going to add some water to it. Now, people always say, oh, how much water did you put in? We put in a decent amount so that the paper is fully saturated with water, which we want. A little bit extra around the edges isn't too much of a problem. Now, one of the biggest issues that I see with loads of painters and loads of things that happen is that whether you're using a DIY one or whether you're using like a manufactured branded one, the foam and sponge that's in those ones tends to stay quite flat, which is fine. But then when we come on to putting the baking sheet on top, the issue that I'm going to explain now is also quite prevalent and does happen quite a lot. So as you can see here, we've got loads of little air bubbles that are underneath the paper towel. That's a huge problem. Air is the biggest killer of a wet palette. And generally, if you set your palette up with a DIY one like this, you don't want that air in there. So the other reason why I like a lid that's big, get ourselves a nice brush. And literally all we do is we just tease all the air out of the palette like this. So you can see it coming out the edges here. We're literally just going to get all the air out of that wet palette so that there is none underneath. Now, the reason why Blitz is so good is, like the advert, when it's wet, it stays strong. So we're not going to be tearing it or anything by doing this. And I'm being really gentle here just to make sure I get all the air out of that undersheet, which we want. Okay, so this is, for all intents and purposes, this is our foam layer that you'd have if you've got a pre-manufactured one. All right, okay, so again, all the air bubbles are out, as you can see there, which is nice. Then when it comes to the baking sheet, obviously it's got a bit of a curve on it, as you can see. You want the curve upwards, so you don't want the edges curved up. You want the actual middle to be curved so that when you push it down, it goes perfectly in the center. Now, what will happen is the edges will curve, as you can see here. So you just run your finger a few times like this, okay, just to make sure that sticks to the sort of blitz underneath. And again, this is now catching up with the pre-manufactured ones. A lot of people will just put their sheet on top and start painting straight away, and they'll have crinkles or they'll have air pockets and things like this. You really want to have the sheet as flat and as tight as possible to the underneath. So again, using the brush, and again, this is why the using the Tupperware lid is great, because you can run a whole brush perfect size, it fits within the lid, and you can just get that nice and flat. Now, if you do get water on the surface of the paper towel, then really quickly, what you can do is, again, get a great big bit of Blitz, and all you do is literally just mop up any of the excess so that there's no big puddles on there. They can be helpful if you're painting, so it's for dilution, which I'll explain about in a minute. But if you want, you can just wipe away any of the excess bits of water on there to get that surface a little bit drier, so it just got the moisture underneath. So the palette is now set up, ready to use. There's no air pockets underneath the paper towel or the baking sheet, which is great. What tends to happen on a lot of pre-manufactured ones is that the first things first is that the baking sheet or the sheet that goes on top is cut to the exact same size as the foam. One of the big problems with that is that you might not be able to see it, but factually the edge of the paper is level with the foam, and there is an edge on that all the way around, 360 degrees around that sheet. Air gradually starts to encroach in that gap between the top sheet and your foam, and it starts to lift. Most notably, on a lot of manufactured ones, that happens in the corners. So the beauty with the DIY one that I use is that because this has got a wet edge, 360 degrees around it, and because you've pushed it down nice and tight to the surface of the pallet, there is no way that air is going to get under there, and you've pushed out all the air from underneath the pallet. So this is a completely sealed environment, so air cannot permeate underneath the sheet, can't get in there, can't start lifting, and this will work and function for hours and hours and hours without fail, consistently, because air is not encroaching underneath the sheet that you're going to work on. The other thing where this really starts to sort of pay dividends is for things like transfers, for example. Now, I'm not a big fan of fishing. I don't know about anyone watching this podcast, but putting a transfer in a bowl and watching it spin round and then the transfer comes off the sheet is not fun for me personally. This perimeter of paper towel, when you're doing your transfers, you just put them on here. It absorbs the water from the blitz, and then you can use it straight away. You haven't got to do any fishing. You haven't got to have any fights with water, you know, just trying to get your transfers. You can use this circumference perfectly for sort of like set for getting your transfers ready. So again, the other thing is that your attention while you're working is focused fully and completely on this working area rather than the bowl to your left where your transfers are spinning around or whatever. The other thing, which is a huge thing for me while I'm working and using this palette, is that for dilution, if you put most people will put their paintbrushes into the water pot to add water to their paint, okay, which is a thing which, don't get me wrong, it's fine, but obviously brushes, as we all know, absorb water. So the brush head will absorb water like a mop. If I want to make incremental dilutions, as in like just boost the dilution slightly left or right, maybe add a tiny bit more paint, or if I want to literally just make it a little bit more watery, you have to be either really careful as you put your paintbrush into your water pot, okay? But with this, all you do, you just touch and introduce it into the paint, so that you can literally do incremental stages of dilution by literally just touching and adding that water in there. And if you haven't mopped off all the little bits of water, you can literally just touch this little puddle here, for example, and just add that into your paint. The virtue that has is that what it does is it's focusing your attention consistently on your palette. You're being distracted going over to the water pot. You're not doing this. You're not looking anywhere else, but you're working centrally in this one area, and all your focus and attention is purely on this. The virtues, as I mentioned already, are that it doesn't dry out anywhere near as quick because air doesn't permeate under the edge. It focuses your attention solely on this working area all the time. Dilution, you can just incrementally add tiny little bits of water into your paint from just touching the edge here, for example. The beauty as well is that you can leave this overnight. I've literally had a palette like this, aside from the rare occurrence in England where we have like a 35 degree summer or something crazy like that, I've literally left this without a lid on overnight, and I come back the next morning and it's still ready for me to work. And I can literally just touch the paper towel, introduce it into the area of paint, and it reestablishes itself and works perfectly straight away.
If it does dry out as well, do you want to just show how you can top it up really easily?
Yeah. So again, really easily, all you do is literally you'll just introduce a bit of water into the corner, and you literally just tilt the palette a little bit. Okay. And it will just absorb through the paper towel. Obviously, this is really wet, but if it was dried out a little bit, you just tilt it and it just introduces in there. And the beauty of it, again, is all you do is if you do see a slight air bubble or something, for example, it will be on the paper towel and not actually under here because the air can't access it. But you just use the brush just to push any extra air that you see just out of the sheet. Factually, this is going to focus your attention in one area while you're working for dilution. It's going to really make your dilution way more refined. It's just going to help you to really take full advantage of the benefits of that it provides you with. And then if you do want to, the other thing I also suggest as well is if you do want to, you can use the bowl part of the Tupperware, put that on. If you've got a mini fridge under your painting desk, you can put
I've been, if you've got what?
Have you got a mini fridge under your painting desk?
Is that a common thing? No, it's not a common thing.
This is
an early episode hack.
I'm sorry, Mr. Slate.
But the thing is like if you do want to make this endure even longer, I have used a mini fridge previously, or even placed this pallet into the fridge. Okay. I've picked it out 2-3 days later and it's still perfectly workable. Like it works really, really well. Now, one of the big concerns for
I guarantee no one thought that's where that was going. No one thought we were going to end the wet palette demonstration with. And by the way, there's a mini fridge.
The other thing I will say as well about this is that I obviously, you know, personally for me, like I've seen the foam palettes and things like that. That foam does go moldy. It does, you know, irrelevant of what you may think or may have been told, that foam does go moldy after some time. This is obviously, once if this does dry out, it's paper, you can stick it in the recycling as well, which is quite
yeah,
good.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, every single time you're setting up a new pallet, you're obviously replacing the kitchen paper. So it's,
yeah, you know. Yeah, I get that totally, but it's...
No, I meant in the sense of, unlike with the sponge, which is going to last you the whole time. Yeah. You can try and clean it, but eventually yeah. It's going to, you know...
Yeah, and the thing is, it's really, like cost-wise as well, this is really, really economical. And personally for me, and this is obviously opinionated, if you don't agree, that's perfectly fine. But I honestly get the best performance out of this palette over every other product I've used over many, many years. We've tried all manner of different branded palettes, manufactured palettes, etc. Like, if you do worry about mold and if you are putting it in the fridge and all that kind of stuff, you can literally just put a bit of copper coin or copper in the corner here and that works just as well, exactly like that. But the thing is, the biggest thing that this combats is air permeating under the sheet and causing lifting, which is, and air is the biggest killer of a palette. But I've got to really hammer it home that the prep for a pallet is one of the most important things. I see so many people on classes or when I talk on do online tuition or anything like that, where they literally just put the sheet on top of the foam if they're using a preordained manufactured pallet, and there's loads of crinkles, loads of little air pockets and stuff under it. Like, taking 2 minutes to get that out from underneath the sheet makes your pallet last longer factually. That's not my opinion. Air kills a palette. It's as simple as that.
I would say as well, yeah, even a lot of the tips from this, even if you do have one of those palettes, you can probably take some of the tips from this with regards to setting up, like you're saying, and 100%. Get a bit better use out of it.
I've had students that have bought this baking sheet and they've cut it a little bit smaller than their foam, and then they do that.
That's what I do.
Yeah, it works really well as well. But the one thing I would say to you is that, like, with for endurance, I can honestly say to you that I'll have to set up like a camera with a stopwatch or something and leave it overnight with a light on or something. But
it definitely lasts longer.
This factually lasts
longer.
Put a little
GoPro in the mini fridge.
Yeah.
That'd be like the start to the video. But you know when people put they set it up and they put up the camera in the fridge.
Yeah, and then you open the fridge door and there's just like an egg. Oh, it wouldn't be an egg for James. But there's just like some tofu and then wet palette.
Yeah, but what I'll say to you is that this has got loads of user-friendly advantages over any other competitor product on the market. You can make this yourself. It lasts longer, performs better, and also gives you that functionality, whereas whether it's for transfers around the perimeter, whether it's like really refined tiny little dilutions as you're just adding incremental tiny little bits of paint, like your brush touching that paper towel just slightly absorbs less water that allows you to introduce that into the paint. It just makes your whole painting process more refined by the way that you work. And yeah, as I said, give it a try. If you like it, then you know, I hope you enjoy using it and it benefits your painting massively.
As artists, we know how time consuming painting miniatures is, especially if you want to achieve a high standard for tabletop or display. Life is busy and we don't all have 8 hours a day to paint. Plus, if you're still early in your painting journey, it may feel that you're a long way off ever owning your own beautiful army for your games. For 10 years, Siege Studios has been delivering bespoke miniature painting commissions to collectors and gamers all over the world. We have a world-class team of artists from Golden Demon winners to ex-studio painters, collating hundreds of years of collective experience. Here at Siege, we offer a series of painting levels and services to meet your needs and budget, whether you want a favorite character for your display or a stunning gaming army. We pride ourselves on offering well above the industry standard of quality and our customer experience. To see our gallery, learn more about our services, and get a quote now, head over to siegestudios.co.uk or head to the link in this episode's description. Do you use one of these as well?
Yeah, so there's a couple of things I was going to say, actually, because there's like certain things that I don't necessarily do.
Because I use a manufactured one, but then I do all of the extra steps
on top
from
of
this.
I remember, I seem to remember you saying you just wanted the nice box. You just wanted the nice case. The main difference for mine, which I'm wondering if it will help a little bit more. I mean, I don't really have any problems with mine, but the lid that I use, it's the same size, but it's like...
Got bevel in
it's
it.
Got flat. Like a bevel in it, yeah, so it's not completely flat.
Yeah, I should have caveated that. You do want to get a lid that you use for your palette that is as flat as possible.
So I kind of do what you're saying,
yeah,
but within the bevel.
Mm-hmm.
So it's all just like a step smaller. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So I've got a big lid, but I don't have a big palette really. You've got like a mini palette inside my big Tupperware lid.
Could you not put a bit of extra kitchen paper in there to like fill
level it out? You probably could if it was like a little bevel, but this is seemingly a design feature that they were quite happy with and it's fairly deep.
I did actually miss something off that I just wanted to throw in as well, because I do want to say this. Obviously, we always talk about wet palettes and dry palettes and like what's better, what's worse, whatever, blah, blah. I don't think that there's a better or worse. They're both tools for different jobs, if that makes sense. I've got quite a lot of water in here, as you can see, but when I don't put loads of water and I just make sure the paper towel is wet, I actually use the exterior perimeter of plastic. I use that as a dry palette as well. So yes, you've got everything in front of you, again, focusing your attention and making you, anything you need to use is there. Like if you are doing dry brushing, you can just take the excess off on that dry bit there on the brush, and you can dry brush the base or whatever it is you're dry brushing. It has so much functionality and flexibility to it compared to any other palette that's on the market.
Yeah, I actually have similar point to that. The good thing about the Tupperware that I have is, we were saying about obviously kind of flipping it upside down, aren't you? And then the actual Tupperware is the lid,
if you
like. The bottom of mine has like a crisscross pattern on it. So it's like loads of little like squares. Mm-hmm. Do you get what I mean? Like a waffle pattern. Sure. And you can, for using that as a dry palette, that's, it's like good, loads of little mini
texture, little
palettes.
That's quite good actually, yeah. That's really good.
Which is quite good because it like just contains, you can put a few different colours at once and it contains them in.
Yeah.
So I've kind of used that, but I actually mostly have a white tile.
Yeah, tile is good as well.
I just have that I use for a thing. That could be a hobby.
I've tried every wet palette, like all of them, and every single one has the same problem with the paper that comes with it is no good. So I end up just using like my own baking paper that I then cut smaller to like fit within the sponge. It basically does the same thing in effect as that. But then the sponge just dries out like way quicker.
Yeah. So, and I've got to say, look, I'd love to be sponsored or endorsed by Blitz. So if you're watching, please do get in touch.
But that's the dream.
But the thing is,
that's the dream sponsor. The thing is Regina.
It is, yeah. The paper is designed to absorb and hold water. Like, really, really, and it does that, which is also why when we use a sheet of Blitz, we fold it in half, so we're doubling the absorption that it actually has, which is again really helpful. But yeah, as I said, if you like what you see, if you see the benefits and the USPs of it, then give it a try. Head down to TK Maxx, buy a palette, buy a Tupperware, and then you can you can set your own up and give it a trial.
The TK Maxx thing is maybe how expensive is it? More expensive than TK Maxx?
I'll tell you this right now.
I imagine Tupperware.
My Tupperware cost me £7. Okay, and it's massive.
That's not that bad. Yeah, that's all right. That's not that bad.
So
you're still more expensive than if you were going somewhere like that.
You're looking total.
But it's still significantly less expensive than buying one of the wet palettes from.
True. Do you know what? Yeah. I wouldn't even know how much they are.
They're like 30, 40 quid. Some of them.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So
okay,
like you, well, for that investment of revenue, you could literally buy one or two Tupperwares. Yeah, and also a pack of Blitz and also your baking sheet, and you still have cash left over for buying a couple of paints. Yeah. So
if you want to do the mini fridge thing, that's probably a bit more.
Yeah, the mini fridge blows it out of water. Definitely.
Yeah, it's a bit more of an investment.
The mini there is no one who saw that coming. That's so out of left field, the fridge thing.
It works though.
Do you know what? As we were sitting here doing it, I was like, maybe it's just from my point of view, because I've heard you talk about it so much. I'm like, does everyone know this already? Like, are we really doing a whole, are people going to be listening to this thinking, oh, you know, I've already heard that. And then you said mini fridge and I was like, no, they haven't heard it.
I think the DIY wet palette gets a stigma as a like, try this to see if you like it, to see if you want to buy the real thing.
Yeah, exactly.
But then you end up coming full circle. I mean, that's what I did. Yeah. I had like the DIY wet palette, made my own one. I was like, oh yeah, this is good. I'll buy a real one. Bought the real one, didn't like it. Bought a different one because I was like, oh, this one would be better. Didn't like that one. Got another one and I'm like 100 quid deep on wet palettes.
I was going to say, you must be so, you've spent a fair bit. You could have got a mini fridge.
Yeah.
Probably by now.
But then I end up coming full circle to the like, I guess this is like a bougie DIY one, right? This is like.
I never thought the word bougie would ever be used in my wet palette. But fair enough. I mean, if that's what you think. I mean, I suppose it is a bit.
No, your one isn't the bougie one. His one is the bougie one because he's got the fancy case that costs him 40 quid for a wet palette.
40 quid for a Tupperware.
Yeah. Throw all the wet palette stuff out.
I would argue yours is quite bougie as well, actually.
It's pretty bougie. It's
Blitz. It's TK Maxx.
Blitz is pretty premium. So, like,
I would actually say that for this specific setup, the kitchen paper quality is more important than the actual paper. The
Oh, definitely.
I've got to say this, like the sheet that I use, the paint just behaves in a way which it just doesn't on the pre-manufactured palettes that are out there. It just behaves like it tends to on the pre-manufactured ones. It tends to dry in a patch.
They dry. I don't know why they dry.
It dries like in this weird patch, and then you almost have to reactivate it. Whereas on the baking sheet, it because it's got that
that grease-proof because it's got layer on it
because it's got that property of that paper. The liquid just stays in little puddles.
It's not quite the same as wax paper though, because it's not like water repellent. It's not like when the water like beads up and runs off. Like it does soak in. Do you know what's really important to me that everyone always skips over? You kind of mentioned it as you were setting up. Is I don't know why there's this notion that like the top of the palette is meant to be like bone dry. Because part of the process, I think, for making it easier to squeeze all the water out is to get the top and the paper, the palette paper, the parchment paper, fully saturated and soaked in water.
Yeah.
And like I'll run around it with like my finger instead of a brush, but I'll completely soak the top. Then I'll do what you said and dry it. But what I like to do, this is a little hobby hack. You ready for this one? I have a little tiny little misting bottle that's used for like house plants.
Yeah.
And I'll, from above, just spray like a light mist on the top.
It depends because
that is ridiculous.
It depends because
a ridiculous amount of care for your.
I take the excess water off because if I've had it before where I've
it's a mist though. It's not.
Yeah,
water,
no,
it's
I get that. I get that. But what I was going to say is I've had it before. I put paint onto my palette and there's been a puddle and the puddle was just gone into the paint.
So
and
done into it, the
yeah.
paint.
See, that's why you buy the mist bottle because it's microscopic. You almost can't even see it.
Yeah, I whether you choose to do that or not, it's up to you. But like, again, same with the mini fridge. But like, but all I would say is that, yeah, like,
I'm sorry, he comes out of a mini fridge, like it's the most normal thing in the world. And I mentioned a misting bottle and you two are like, oh,
that's weird. No, it is. I don't know. James saying a mini fridge to me is less surprising than you coming out that you treat your wet palette as if it's a bonsai tree or something.
Yeah. No, I think ultimately one of the real things that I would very much, the reason why I wanted to do this in the episode and talk about this was actually like the thing very first and foremost, whether you like the things that you've seen that I've demonstrated in this or not, just making sure that you spend that minute or two to set your palette up correctly. I see it so much, even from like really experienced, you know, painters that have done all manner of different things, leaving crinkles, creases, air pockets and things under your sheet is just a big no-no. Like you're literally tying your shoes together if you're trying to run a race by doing that. It's the worst thing. Air is the biggest killer of a wet palette, and the more you can do to mitigate it being underneath, and that's why on mine, that 360 wet perimeter around the sheet creates a barrier that stops air from getting underneath that sheet. That's one of the biggest USPs about it. And it's actually one of the biggest design flaws that a lot of the branded manufactured ones have, like the paper being the same size perfectly as the foam just completely mitigates the point of the function of the palette, if that makes sense. So yeah. So if you like it, give it a try and let us know in the comments your thoughts.
Cool. Okay. Number two, model holders. I think this is something that we're all a bit opinionated about. This is going to be, I guess, our disagreement and disliking for the way that most companies approach the painting holder for attaching your models to, I guess, and holding while you paint. James, again, going back to an OG one on the episode, you dropped the knowledge bomb of the disposable shot glasses.
Yeah, 100%. They are absolutely perfect for miniature painting. And specifically the bigger shot glasses, not the smaller ones that you would typically get down a bar if you're going out with your mates drinking. It's the bigger ones. So the party size ones.
The doubles.
Yeah, the doubles, yeah. Yeah, obviously, they're designed to be held in the hand, first and foremost. That's what they're for. But what you obviously do with painting miniatures with them is you flip them upside down, which makes a perfect cone shape, which just fits really, really perfectly in the hand. And the beauty of it for me personally is that they're light, which I've tried a lot of painting handles, and it's like going to the gym while painting models. Like I literally,
some of them get really fancy as well, don't they? Like all the extra cups on them, and they're made of like exotic materials.
Yeah, I've seen that. You've seen those ones with the like the arm thing where you can rest your finger on as like a leaning or bracing point. Just stick a bit of sprue onto the shot glass. Just mitre bond a bit of sprue on there. Job done. You know, like
that's great for practicing your edge highlighting as well.
Yeah, functional tool. But yeah, I really prefer shot glasses, and I've tried all manner of different holders, like, you know, whether you like you know, any of the branded ones or whatever, blah blah. But
I have both, you know, because I do like some of the like older school painting handles, but the drawback to them being you're kind of only getting one for X amount of budget. Whereas if you go out and buy like a 20 pack of shot glasses, if you're doing an army, you can have every single model on a holder that doesn't need to like come off, I guess, until the end. which is like really, really helpful if you're doing a big project, because you don't want to be like constantly swapping the model in and out the holder. A broken model is doing that as well.
Yeah. Yeah. And the thing is like with a pack of shot glasses, like again, I frequent Poundland quite a lot for painting supplies, but like you can buy a pack of 12 for 99p. So it's less than a pound. Yeah.
Yeah.
And they're great. I know you had experiences of breaking them in the past, but
yeah, to be fair, not the ones that you were talking about.
They're much better.
I bought some off of Amazon or something, and they were just like quite small, like really weak. And
yeah.
It was just like every time I was holding the model, it was just cracking, and I was like, this is rubbish. Which is then when I switched to the Jenga pieces for a little bit.
If you're a little bit heavy handed, you should just put one inside the other.
Yeah, you can stack them.
Instant fix.
Oh, I don't know. Then you're like halving your value for money.
Yeah, but you're breaking less, so you need to replace less.
Well, I just bought better ones. I just bought good ones.
To be fair, the ones
they were the same kind of price, but they were just better. I think obviously most people probably don't need to look into the quality of their plastic shot glasses, because
crushing them with a big man hand.
Yeah.
The other thing I've got to say is that, like,
I'm talking about like when, if people are just getting them to drink and stuff, and they're plastic disposable ones, whatever. Then no one cares, do they? They're not really looking.
Yeah. I had some like left over from a party, and I was like, oh, I bet these. James has recommended it. I was like, I'll give these a go. I've been using them since.
Yeah,
they last quite a while.
I was about to say that I've never once bought like disposable shot glasses for a party. Not like, oh, I've got a party coming up, better get the shot glasses. Yes, but I'm now like fully on them. Yeah.
I think one of the things for me that just really serves a good purpose for them is that they're really comfortable. They're really light. They're perfect for the design. They're designed for the hand. You know, whether you hold them upside down or the way they're supposed to be held for drinking.
Like, I'm going to disagree. I think they're objectively worse to hold in almost every single way.
Probably,
For drink, like if you're
for drinking, holding, I don't find them more comfortable.
Beg your pardon. Yeah. Upside down, they're perfect shape for the hand to hold, but then obviously drinking them, you've got it because obviously it's a cone, it's thinner at the bottom.
Yeah, but George,
I'm saying I don't find them as comfortable to hold as a proper miniature painting handle, but I like them for the fact of I've got loads of them.
Oh,
and
really?
If I'm doing an army of 50 models.
The actual miniature painting handles that are made are obviously designed
to be held that way.
And they look into what would be more comfortable and stuff like that.
Yeah, but I think that's outweighed by the fact of if I'm doing like 30 Marines, I can have every single one on a holder
exactly.
at any given moment, and I can just pick it up and fire away, and I've got to swap holders
exactly
over.
And that's the thing, like the swapping of them can cause breakages. You get like you can slip the model can slip out of them sometimes, you know,
it's just faff and time
and the painting side of it, like I literally my models are built, cleaned, basic material put on them, they're stuck to a shot glass, I use the holder to do all the spray can stuff like the undercoat, etc. It doesn't matter if paint gets on there. I've not got like a 15 pound holder that I'm getting.
See, that's the thing as well, is I don't want to be like spraying with my nice holder because I'll get paint primer on it and then it's going to get gunked up and it's going to stop working.
Yeah, like you know, and yeah, so I think I've tried lots of different things and genuinely for optimal kind of like efficiency of working plus also cost and also not really worrying about getting paint on them, for me they're just perfect.
I quite like as well, because you're normally priming with them,
you
get like some primer over it and then you've got like a little almost like test area where it's like it's on plastic as well,
should've
kind of thing.
So should have saved that for the end, Joe.
Well, and going back
to I'm sure I would have been pulled up for not inventing primer or shot glasses or paint.
Yeah, George.
Well, actually, going back to your previous hobby hack, that is great, because if you want to paint your little line on there,
you don't
want to do that on your... Well, one, you can't do it on your fancy holder because you're going to be swapping the model, so it's not going to apply.
Exactly, obviously. Yeah. I think I specifically said when I said that hack that you need to be using different... It's in that case when you're using a holder for each model.
Yeah,
I find it handy for like just quickly testing like an airbrush pass over it or something, see how the paint's coming out. And yeah, it's good. Cool.
Next one I have on the list is a bit more in my category, I guess I would say, in terms of photography. This one's going to be a light box. So if you're not familiar, these are those like white booths that you buy that often come with like the lights and like a little pop-up thing for like product photography. Mm. And people use them for taking photos of the models because white backgrounds, well lit, makes sense, right? But these aren't designed for front shots of products. They're designed for top-down views of products. And when you look at them, some of them do have light strips like down the side, but they're not optimal angled lights for where the model is. And they're like little like LED strip lights. Like they're not actually that bright. Personally, I like just getting some printer paper, A3 if you can, like the bigger ones. If not A4, because most models are more than small enough to fit in that anyway. Just getting a little curve on it, putting it at the back of your desk and taking a photo with like your hobby lamp just over the top or firing forwards at the model and taking the photo that way. purely because it's not in that closed off space in like a little booth, it's getting more ambient light from the room. So if you're doing it in the daytime, like in a well-lit room, you've got the ambient light in addition to your hobby light. You're getting a much nicer angle of the shot, and you can be much more flexible in like taking photos from the side and whatnot because you've got that paper behind it. And those light boxes tend to be very, very expensive. Whereas I can almost guarantee you've got some printed paper already, and you've already got a lamp that you're that you're painting with already. Hopefully, a Onyx lamp from the store. But that is what you take first. Models, by the way. But and you can get the perfect angle, and you've got everything already. And I find that I can take better photos doing that. So I don't personally understand going out and spending a load of money on another little gizmo that you've got to store somewhere also, pack down.
It's also like really easy to put that paper in place over whatever you've got going on your desk anyway. Because like I've had it before where, you know, I haven't had much room on my desk so I wasn't really sure how to fit that in. But it's fairly easy to just like put a bit of blue tack on each part of the back of the paper, make the curve and... you know, blue tack it to your drawers that are on there, or you're painting it or something. Or I've done it before where I've like put like a primer can there and just like blue tacked it to the primer can and then blue tacked it
coffee
to the floor.
Mug, anything will do.
Well, I've got something to throw in. It's a mid-pod hack. So if you get
keep saying that every time we say something, by the way.
Anytime we give you any sort of info whatsoever, we're like, it's a little hack, little bonus hack.
Okay. Well, it is a hack. So anyway, get yourself a cardboard box that is the same width as the paper. If you cut the box diagonally in half from one corner to the other, it gives you a perfect L-shaped bit that you can stick your paper permanently in, and it allows you to have the curve.
So you have your own little permanent curve set up.
That's what
I've got. What James saying, build a light box.
But it's not a light box because it's not. It's literally
he's just building a stand for his curved paper.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. And it works perfectly. So, nice. So yeah, and you can literally just blue tack it to that and it stays perfectly.
Mm. Okay. Next up, liquid mask.
Ah, yes.
This one may or may not be controversial.
I don't have any experience with this really, to be honest. So I don't really know. It just skipped me by. It always seemed like a bad idea to me. So a bad idea in my hands.
Yeah.
I feel like I wouldn't be able to use it properly.
There's a few masking products. Mm. I'm talking specifically about the latex that you buy and you brush on.
Mm.
Couple of reasons. I didn't know any of these when buying my liquid mask. I was very, very excited because I was doing a lot of airbrushing at the time. I was like, I'd seen it online. I'm like, oh my God, how do I know about liquid mask? It's just like, it's going to change my life. Bought the liquid mask, put it on my model, instantly realized it was drying in my brush. That's knackered now. Absolutely totals a brush, like instantly. There is no way to get that latex out of your brush, like once it's soaked up in there.
So what is the official recommended way of applying it then? Like what are you supposed to do?
With a crap synthetic brush.
Yeah, kill it. I don't think they actually...
What's it just one use pretty brush? Much. Brush is
I'm
done.
Sure someone in the comments is going to give some perfectly reasonable advice about how you go to...
You probably wash the brush in something, in a chemical.
I'm sure there's some chemical or whatever, but you know... I just assumed that I would just be able to, you know, use it out of the bottle, rinse it out, and it'll be fine. It's not fine. Second of all, it goes on in such a thin film that when it comes to removing it, it just starts to crumble and turns to dust. It's not this like nice peel that you're expecting. So to get it to work properly, you have to cake on layer after layer after layer, knowing this going in, so that you can get like a reasonably substantial peel. But then you'll find it's got incredible grip strength, and when it's like wrapped around in your like spindly part of a model, it doesn't want to come off. Then you end up breaking your models. It's a nightmare. I absolutely hate it.
I'm gonna completely align myself. I tried it. I thought this is absolute nonsense. And then I just painted the detail that I wanted neat.
Yeah,
I literally probably spent as much.
I will say, like, there are other masking methods that there I do are, like and enjoy, but this was specifically such a disappointment. And I tried so hard. I was like, clearly it's me. Like, because everyone's using this stuff. Clearly it's me. And I've tried loads of different ways of doing it. I've watched loads of different videos. I've not really seen anyone kind of address the fact of this is the problem with it too much. Like, people have mentioned it, but it seems that people who use it kind of just neglect that fact, if you get what I mean.
Yeah, I'm just not a big fan. I've tried it a few times and it's been faff every time.
Yeah.
I'm just like, I'm just going to paint this thing it'd be really neat, or just literally take that part off.
We have model. You. What was it? You said you like make a little bib out of a.
Oh yeah,
out of a post-it
so,
note.
Yeah,
or something.
So I literally a hole punch in the corner. So if I want to paint,
post-it
it was something like that. Wasn't
there
it?
Was a cling film thing. Is that what you're thinking?
Yeah, and then he said about another one where you get like a bit of paper or something.
Oh. So that's basically when you've got a metal model or you've got a model where the head is attached to the model.
Yeah,
I literally just hole punches and a hole punch in the corner of a bit of A4 paper and make a bib and then airbrush the skin tone or whatever it is and then take the bib
like
off.
Like the guy in Toy Story when he puts the little bib on Woody's airbrush's face.
Yeah. Basically that, yeah.
I do like using blue tack and like other putty products. Yeah. I've not tried too many of those. I know there's some like dedicated to using as like mask. I'm not sure what they're like. But the latex liquid mask, not for me. I think you can definitely just go about it with using some blue tack or some paper or some masking tape.
Yeah, I was gonna say,
however you can go about not using it.
Well, what has been your, when you realized that didn't work, what did you go to?
I think I was expecting it to just save me all this time because I was like, oh, I can mask this bit off, spray it with the airbrush, remove it, and then I haven't got to like repaint anything or touch anything up. But you end up spending so much time faffing around with the liquid mask and getting all over the place and ruining your brush and wasting a load of time that it would have been much, much, much quicker to just airbrush it on and then just paint over all of the overspray.
Oh, so your alternative since has just been just paint it
just
normally.
Yeah, as if you didn't have it.
I think that is a thing to take into any gadget and things like this really, is that like sometimes you can just do without it.
Yeah.
Like,
well, it's like
someone's invented it to sell it. Like,
yeah,
they're not always trying to solve a problem.
It's a solution looking for a problem.
Yeah, yeah. Sometimes. Yeah. Like, it just is the case sometimes. So it's like, yeah.
We frequently hear from you with questions asking how you can paint like our team of world-class and award-winning artists. Teaching is something that all of the team here at Siege are very passionate about, and we want to share with you the methods and techniques that we use to paint every single day all of the incredible miniatures and armies that you have seen from us. With the Siege Studios Patreon, you'll gain access to a growing catalogue of over 300 step-by-step tutorials covering a huge variety of colour schemes, miniatures, painting styles and techniques, from beginner-focused foundation tutorials to full character masterclasses. Each lesson comes in a beautifully designed and easy-to-follow PDF format with accompanying artist commentary, with new tutorials added every single week. Your subscription also includes access to our private Patreon channels on Discord, so that you can interact directly with our artists asking for questions or feedback. You'll also be supporting the podcast directly, helping us to bring you these episodes every single week. So if you want to take your painting to the next level and make the most of your very valuable hobby time, head over to patreon.com/Siege Studios. Okay, finally on the list, we have cork for basing material.
Oh, worst basing material ever.
Fresh off the back of George recommending the cork thing like on a hobby hack not too long ago.
I said for a dry brush palette.
Oh, I thought it was like,
That was a bonus use case.
I'm pretty sure you said you can break it up and use it as like basing material.
Well, people do use it as basing material.
I just think that, look, I understand why people use it, and I just want to caveat and say that. I understand because you can break it. It looks like rock, etc. Just use rocks. Just use stone. Just use slate.
Go back to an old hobby hack and get some, some garden slate and crush it with a hammer.
Yeah, you can use slate.
Just use that. Like, it crumbles, it breaks, it absorbs paint. So what happens is that if you don't paint it properly, you've got to cake loads of paint onto it, you know, and it breaks and scuffs really easily. If you put varnish over it, it gets more brittle and can crack more. Like, it's just an absolute nightmare.
I like cork for basing as like a core material that I'm going to add my stuff to. It's kind of like padding filler, if you get what I mean. So like almost as if, because I don't want to make it like hollow, obviously. So I've got to stick all my rocks to something.
Yeah, yeah.
To build up.
If you're going to build around it, then fair enough.
Every time I've used it, I've PVA'd the whole thing and put sand over the top of it to build a like a raised platform, or to add a bit of more of a natural shape so I can break it, and then I put sand over it so it looks like the earth is over the top of it. But I never just put cork on the base, dry brush it a couple of colours, and that's it.
Why people do that. I've done it a lot in the past. It's a very, very beginner friendly way of going about basing, and it does look quite nice for a pretty low amount of effort, and it's very, very easy to just tear with your hands.
You
haven't got to look for like a specific rock that fits the right area you want. You've got to
but you say low effort, but I'm not being funny, but getting a knife, scouring a base, bit of PVA and just putting sand on the top of it is low effort.
But this is when people want rocks and stuff instead, isn't it? When
the big rock platform for your character or something.
I've never really liked the look of just using cork. Like, I don't think, especially when you get like, you know, you get like the thin layers of it, and sometimes
you can see the layers.
You can literally either see the layers coming through the paint, or like you can see the, if it's just flat on the top, like it's a sheet, and no one, they haven't like, someone hasn't like cut it up and they're just using the flat top.
Mm-hmm.
And you, to me, I'm just like, I'm looking too at flat. It, and I'm like, well, it doesn't look like.
I can't unsee it as cork either.
Yeah,
being honest.
Yeah,
I'm at a point now where like I've seen enough cork bases to just see cork stuck on a base.
Yeah, it's also like just so rare. Like James was saying, it's so rare that the paint hasn't chipped somewhere on it.
Yeah,
like
models don't stick to it very, very well either because it's soft. So like it will kind of flex even if you pin it. Like, and it kind of wants to crumble.
The pin moves. The model will move slightly, or it'll get knocked, and the hole that you put through the cork with the pin will just get bigger, and then the model will become loose. Like it happens all the time. It's like, yeah, just if you want to emulate rock, just use rocks. Yeah. And also, it weighs the base down, so it makes the model more stable on the table. So
yeah,
like,
yeah. My suggestion would be to get the garden slate, like chipping stuff that you use for landscaping, put it in a little Ziploc bag, give it a whack with a hammer. Job done.
Yeah.
Get some nice bits of slate. Or like you said, go looking for a forest, get some like bark. And I think coconut fibre is quite popular for that sort of stuff.
You know, I just can't say I've ever seen that, to be honest.
I think there's just better, tree-based materials, you could say.
Yeah, yeah.
Than cork, I think. But
I literally just got a bag of slate and stuck it in my next-door neighbour's cement mixer without any cement in it.
Yeah, just do that.
And that worked.
Everyone's got a next-door neighbour with a cement mixer.
Yeah. Everyone's got a next-door neighbour with a cement mixer and everyone's got a mini fridge
under their desk. Yeah.
It's always just a weirdly specific thing where you like just do that.
And it's so like, niche. Not... So niche. Question of the week time. Thank you everyone for submitting your questions for question of the week. If you have a question that you would like us to answer on a future episode of the podcast, please leave it in the comments down below on YouTube. This week we have a rebuttal. Grimdark Mark says,
started a war.
Yeah, we started a little bit of a feud. Grimdark Mark says, so it looks like Jim has upped his game. So backhand across the court I go. Question for you chaps. When do you class a model as done? I'm going back and doing a little extra here and there. And I also get sidetracked with projects with the new shiny stuff. So never really complete a project or army. What tips can you give to a grim, dark noob like me? Joe, I think you're the perfect man to answer this question.
Yeah, never.
Right, that's the question done.
I think the best way to do it is we've spoken a lot about planning before, mm-hmm. and planning a project. I think in doing a plan beforehand, you'll then know what mark you have to hit to finish, because it's one of those things with art, isn't it? It's never really done. You can always add to it. You can always change it. You can, if you don't have a set thing of that's when it's going to be finished, mm-hmm. you will just be able to add to it forever.
Yeah. I think for me, like, because I'm, most of my painting historically has been commissions for Siege, because they are painted to like a level
specific benchmark you have to hit.
Exactly. It's like, well, I've ticked all of the boxes that are required for this painting level. The model is done.
Yeah. That's a difficulty. I think when you're not doing it as a commission and you're not doing it to meet a certain standard,
yeah,
you have to create your own boxes. But I think do that before you start, and then you'll know when you finish, kind of thing.
Yeah.
I for me personally, I think one of the things that I'd always recommend to anybody is a period of time where you don't look at it. So you get the model to a certain point, you look at it and go, right, I'm done. Returning to it with fresh eyes, be that a week later. Don't put it in the cupboard, put it in your display cabinet, cover it with a mug or something so you can't see it as you look in your display cabinet, or like just anything that stops you from looking at it so that you can approach it with a clear vision of seeing it new, if that makes sense.
I think it depends on what you're trying to get out of what you're painting your model for. Because what you're saying there is probably more geared towards if someone was maybe entering a competition or they're pushing it to a really high level. But for example, you know, we had Peachy on not too long ago, and we were talking about getting models finished for gaming and armies and stuff, and maybe that benchmark of where it's finished will be more based on how long it's going to take you to paint 20 of them and something like that. So it's like, you're not going to want to keep looking back, are you, on those things?
No, that's fair.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you enjoy listening to these podcast episodes every single week, I'd like to ask that you could please do us one small, tiny favor in return and hit that subscribe button on YouTube or the follow button on your podcast app. It takes only 2 seconds and it really, really helps us out, and it allows us to bring you these episodes for free every single week. Thank you so much. Back to the episode. Okay, our little closing weekly tradition is hobby hacks. This is where we share a little hobby hack with you. As we've kind of discussed earlier in the episode, Joe has got the challenge of doing all of our hobby hacks for April. What have you got for us?
Can I just point out, when we set this thing, I don't think any of us realized that, obviously everyone's aware by now, we're sort of batch recording a couple of episodes. We don't normally do that. We record one a week. We try and get them out as quick as possible. We're batch recording a few because George is going to be away. So it is your fault, actually. I'm blaming you. And then when it came to the end of like the last episode or something, we all sort of realized at once that actually all these batches of episodes are going to be in April. So I'm going to have to do all of them at once, which none of you have ever had to do. So I don't think it's very fair, personally. But
that being said,
yeah. That being said, I do have one.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
I didn't invent it, again, just a caveat. I do feel like I need to state that now. It's another basin one. I feel like a lot of our hobby hacks come from basin.
It's fine. We do a lot of basin.
That I picked up from James a little while ago, and he hasn't mentioned it, and I've taken it on and used it a fair bit whenever I wanted to do something like this. So if you want to do like mechanical kind of AdMech or potentially even like Necromunda spaceship style basin, a great bit of kind of basin material to add to it is like a bag of rogue random watch parts. All like the coils and like...
Is that easy to come by?
eBay, cheap, just bag per like as per weight. Like I bought one bag of it like years ago and I've still
really?
Got them, yeah.
I didn't know that was a specific industry of product was reselling random...
It's literally just
parts.
Per weight. Like I imagine it's almost entirely for like craft things and yeah, not yeah. for actual... watch repair or unless yeah. someone
so I
does.
Can actually answer this.
Okay, go on.
So I used to work for a watch repair company and all the they used to basically do all of the watches.
Oh, I see where this is
various,
going.
Various retailers on the high street. So you take your watch in and get it serviced or it stopped working, the arm stopped going, etc. blah blah. So I used to work for a watch repair and I actually it's something that I haven't really spoken about much is that I actually was an apprentice watch repairer a couple of like before Siege and before I was in recruitment. You used to end up with bags and bags and bags and bags of just like broken dead parts. And obviously whether it's like a wind up or whether it's like an automatic or whether it's like whatever method of mechanism the watch has got, there's always lots of components, be they plastic, metal or anything like that whatsoever. So
it's not like new parts to fix it. It's the opposite. It's all
it's
the
like
old
getting
stuff.
Rid of getting rid of parts.
The yeah. bag that you will get or like what you'll get off of eBay will literally be just a myriad of like from tens and tens and tens of different watches.
That's
like
exciting. Your little AdMech chap could be stood atop a watch that was like used for someone had that on their wrist for like yeah. 15 years.
Yeah, know? Yeah. But it just looks cool. It's easy, quick way to like decorate a kind of spaceship type thing, isn't it? Nice, but yeah. I just remember that. Yeah, that was something that obviously I picked up a lot since working here and it was just one of those really quick, like easy things where I was like, okay, I've not heard anyone else talk about that.
No, and, I've not heard that before. I like it.
And it stuck with me. So
nice.
Passing that on. Did not invent it.
you didn't invent the watch.
Didn't invent the watch. But
nice. Yeah. Okay. Thank you everyone for listening to this week's episode of Paint Perspective. If you could please support the show by leaving us a rating or review on iTunes, liking the video, leave a comment down below for question of the week. Support the show any way you can. We also have a Patreon linked in the description below. There is a podcast here just for you listeners where you can support the show that way and you'll get access to our Discord as well. Thank you, everyone. We will catch you next week.